monthly webinar. We are here in our Starkey offices in Baltimore, Maryland.
Palatial.
What'd you say?
Palatial offices.
I'm Rabbi Tzvi Goldberg, and we are joined today by Rabbi Moshe Farkas in Yerushalayim, Ir HaKodesh. Welcome, Rabbi.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for joining us. And of course, to our regular listeners, we have Rabbi Beyer, been on many times. And thank you for joining us, Rabbi Beyer. So I just want to make a few technical introductions. Number one is, if you have some issue with your computer, you can reach us by phone at 267-279-9000 and enter conference 859-495-668. And that way
someone said speak louder, see.
Speak louder. Okay. Let's take a timeout for a radio check. Can people hear us? If a few people who are listening, if you can just chat with us on the bottom right. Zev said it's loud enough. Okay.
Thank you very much.
She hears fine. Okay, Alba from Spain. Thank you very much. Okay, so I would say that Ken, who has some issue with the sound, turn up your volume, because we don't have any issue. As long as a few people can hear us, then we know it's getting out. Okay. As you can see on the bottom right of your screen, we have a chat. And in honor of today's webinar, you can also translate it to Hebrew. There is a button there that if you want to, you can use it to translate to Hebrew or any other language, Spanish, whatever language you'd like, to Portuguese, whatever language you'd like to translate it to.
What we're saying going to be like subtitled also?
No. You just have a way of translating the chat to whatever language you want. Let me just start in saying that today, we're not promising you to talk about individual certifications, like with names and all the gory details. It's not, that's not for a public webinar. If you'd like, you can always contact us and be in touch with us to get that information. We're talking from a general perspective. What is kashrus in Eretz Yisrael all about? And then in the second half of our webinar, we're going to speak with Rabbi Shalom Tendler about kashrus traveling around the United States. Rabbi Farkas, what is that? There's some background noise. Do you hear it?
Yes, it's people.
Okay.
What is
it? Right. Hashem, it's not like big mice or something.
Okay. There's some background noise on your side, I think.
Is that better?
Okay, hopefully it will be okay. All right. So tell us what you do, just generally, Rabbi Farkas. What's your organization called? What do you do? Just we'll start off with that.
So basically, the organization that I work for is called Zinti Kosher, Vada Kashrus in Eretz Yisrael, basically helping Americans navigate Kashrus in Eretz Yisrael. When they come to Eretz Yisrael, there's Bekehila living here in Yishlaim, Beit Shemesh, a lot of different neighborhoods. Rabbi Shmuel Wiener spearheaded this project, I want to say somewhere between 7 to 8 years ago, where he's a Rav of a shul in Ramat Eshkol called Zichron Nasan Tzvi, and basically started catering to his chevra, and he's also Rebbe in the morning in Rabbi Center's yeshiva and afternoon at Taras Moshe, and basically he became the go-to guy for kashrus, and based on that, we started, trying to get some restaurants and information about hotels and products, and we'll talk about all those details.
So he does kashrus during Ben Astarim, is that the idea?
Our phone lines are open from 2 to 3 p.m. Yeah, that's Ben Astarim officially, yeah.
So you showed me before a little card, Rabbi Farkas. Can you show us that, your business card? Okay,
this
so
is
that's
our business
ZNT
card.
Kosher. Yeah, so you can see the email there, zntkosher@gmail.com. Get ready to answer all the emails that are going to come in. Right?
Right. Okay. We help with restaurants, hotels, and food products. Basically, when people go into shopping, supermarkets, okay, you have many, many products from all over the world here. So it's a basically match this symbol to try to find that symbol. Like, where's Waldo? Try to find the symbol on your
okay,
on
so
your package
four,
of.
You can just hold it there for a second, Rabbi. So those are the four hechsherim which we are mentioning that are. You're basically saying that, you know, you see that you're good to go. The one on the top left is the Bedatz Yerushalayim, and then on the right is Bedatz Mahajan, Rabbi Rubin. The bottom left is Rabbi Landau, and the bottom right is Sheiris. So those hechsherim, you're saying that they're all acceptable
for all products. Next time we print up these cards, we're gonna have a star K in the middle. we're gonna sell that spot in the middle for. We'll talk about it after we go offline.
Okay. All right. Very good. ZNT. The question is. Oh, yeah. Okay. The question was, what does ZNT stand for? So it's not Zionist kosher, but it's Zifrin.
I was just going to say that.
Zifrin Nelson Zvi, the name of Rabbi Wiener Shul.
Stole my thunder. Okay.
Right. Okay. I just want to mention to if you know, we have our regular listeners. We always have some new listeners that this is not a shiur. It's not like a class, as you can see. It's really, you know, we deal with it as it comes up. We have obviously a plan to get through, but we take your chats, and we have, you know, things that we get sidetracked. We're just trying to give you an idea of what's going on in the bigger picture. So that number that they can call you between 2 and 3 Israeli time is 058 kosher J, right? So in to translate that to English, you know, if you're calling from America, you need to dial 011-972-585-674-375.
You know, is there a way to post that somehow?
Yeah, maybe. We can. I can try as soon as we get a chance, we'll try to do that. And that's between 2 and 3.
I mean, we get phone calls all day, but officially I'm available between 2 and 3 p.m. Now
that's
we're getting
7 to 8 in the morning. 7 to 8 in the morning in America. Okay. So that's when they can reach you to ask you. Okay. So Rabbi Farkas, I've been to Eretz Yisrael many times, many dozens of times, Baruch Hashem. And I've been working in Kashrus for a long time, over 20 years. When I go to Eretz Yisrael, I get nervous also. Like, I don't.
That's,
you know,
not
it's
such
not
a
like
riot to me. I mean, you go anywhere, you get nervous. It's not the...
Okay, that may be true. But what I mean is, it's hard to understand why. This is a question that a lot of people want to understand. In America, they got to figure it out. Okay, they go to Eretz Yisrael, and all of a sudden, it's all who knows what's going on. So,
right.
Give us some perspective of what's the background? Why is that?
Well, Rabbi Bayer,
you want to say something?
No, I was just going to say it's very disillusioning. I mean, people, if you don't know anything about Eretz Yisrael kashrus, and then you come there, you think everything is kosher. I remember as a bacher coming there. This is going back, you know, a little ways, and then being told that you can't just walk into every restaurant or everywhere ever and assume that it's fine, which was really disappointing, actually.
Correct. Basically, what we realized is that, well, the first nekuda really is that it's the culture in Eretz Yisrael is much different. That, you know, makes an afkamina when you're asking a question, how to relate to people, dealing with people. Kashrus is a lot of interpersonal, you know, getting information. So the culture in Eretz Yisrael and the Kashrus culture in Eretz Yisrael is very complicated. When you ask, is it kosher? The answer is everything's kosher. If you ask if it's bedatz, then they always say it's bedatz. And everyone knows that bedatz just means based in tzedek. It doesn't mean, you know, bedatz eid acheritis. So the first nekuda really is that it's a culture difference. So when people come from America, they're used to, let's say, asking a question and getting a straight answer. And it's true, sometimes you ask a question and you get a question back. So that's the first nekuda. The second nekuda really is that I spoke to Ritzi about this before. Kashrus in general is a game of supply and demand. If you go to Los Angeles or if you go to Baltimore, there's multiple restaurants, you know, because there's a demand for a high level of kashrus. If you go to Wichita, Kansas, I'm not sure if there's a pizza shop there. So in Eretz Yisrael, everyone wants kosher, but I'm not sure if in every city they want the level of kosher that you're used to that you have in America. So in the big cities, Yerushalayim, Bnei Brak, you have a big demand for that. But in the smaller cities, I don't want to name cities, but I'm saying when you get out there, they're basically catering to a different clientele. So when an American goes to Eilat, but they don't know that I'm in Eilat, why can't I get a slice of pizza that, you know, would be up to my standards? The answer is there's not enough demand in that city for them to supply. And the cheaper hashgachas, let's say, have cheap, the products are cheaper. So, you know, the businesses aren't buying Eid HaRedis cheese for their pizza, for example, because they don't have to. They don't, it's not necessary.
Aliza asks, do you really think people in America understand kosher?
I don't know if people in America understand kosher in America, but when you go to any city, even the small cities, you have these small vadim, you'll have someone that you can call and you can say, what can I eat in this in your city? In Eretz Yisrael, and when Americans come, they don't have a local vad. So we're officially or theoretically your small little local vad. This, I mean, the ZNT is basically four people, and the rabbi, the rav, me, there's two other mashkichim. It's a very small organization, and you know, we get questions from people in North America, England, Australia, people whoever comes to Eretz Yisrael and speaks English, right? Because they're trying to. Another thing is besides the culture, also the language itself. People don't understand Ivrit. I saw your email. I don't speak Ivrit. How am I even going to navigate this?
It's a great service. I think that's a really wonderful service that you're providing.
Right. What we would do is not really a regular cash. We do certify 8 or 9 restaurants, but most of what we do all day is really service oriented, answering questions, helping people out in certain situations.
One thing, Rabbi, that one thing that is a difference between America. If you have a question, if a restaurant is under the Star K, or under the Chaf K, or under the OU, you can go to the website and you can see right away whether it is or it isn't.
It's not always updated though. Sometimes.
Well, okay.
But yeah, you're right. Most of the
more,
time,
more or fine. Less, more yes, or less. Our website is updated.
Yeah, so, all the time.
No, okay.
I think so. I don't know.
What? So, but you can.
I don't go on the web.
You can get. You can get an updated kosher letter. You can see if it's expired or not. But the Badats, and they don't have websites as far as I can see. So that means you have to call somebody to find out what the story is. That's right. One problem that I have. And the other problem is sometimes you go into let's say Geula, right? And there's a big sign that has a Badatz symbol, Badatz Eid HaRedis, which you showed before, okay? And then you read it closely and it's telling you, it doesn't mean that the store is under the Badatz, that the flavor in the Slurpee is bought from the Badatz. The store, I don't know, has Echsher, doesn't have Echsher, somebody else. You know, you really need to know what you're looking at. I mean, that we would not allow something like that. You know, that's very confusing.
It is a little bit of the wild, not they say the Wild West. It is a little bit of the Wild East over here, correct. I mean, people do make photocopies and put it up and people think that it's actually a certificate. For the American, he has to get used to kind of giving, before you walk, in other words, in America, you walk into a restaurant, you see the certificate, looks pretty original. You walk in here and that's all you have to like kind of take a double take before you, we have the restaurant spreadsheet. On top of the spreadsheet, it says, please double check that the certificate is valid.
Okay. Let me just mention what you're talking about. You have one of your services that people can get if they email the zntkosher@gmail.com, they can get access to your spreadsheet of acceptable restaurants around Israel, right?
That's correct, yes.
Okay, so those are usually under another Hechsher or your Hechsher.
Correct, right. We try to update it every month. For example, Ruben, you know, the only way for me to get their spreadsheet, their list of restaurants, I have to get a fax machine. So, you know, only fax that we're talking about, you know.
That's a problem because Rabbi Ruben has a lot of restaurants that he certifies and we accept him. But where is the current information of where to go? You're sitting there on a Monday, Tuesday night in Yerushalayim. You want to go to what Hechsher is it? And he doesn't. Okay, so there you go, the facts. So in other words, your spreadsheet has that information on it?
We try to update it as much as we can.
Okay, so everybody should know that they can they can email Rabbi Farkas at zntkosher@gmail.com and get that spreadsheet. Very important.
Correct.
Do you?
It's also important. Yeah. I'm sorry. It's also important to note that besides us updating the spreadsheet, when consumers go out to, let's say, into Varian, they realize, you know, again, the cashless market is very, very volatile. In the morning, it could be Hashgacha A, and then someone got into a fight, and then the afternoon, it's Hashgacha B. So I get, you know, consumers, this doesn't happen in Baltimore, right? So the consumers, sometimes they give me information. They send me a picture of a certificate. It's something wrong. So that's also very helpful for us because we can't be all over the country every day. You know, it's almost impossible.
Do you provide information to consumers looking to go grocery shopping, let's say?
So that's really how this started. This card started because between 6 p.m. and 7 p.m., I would get a bunch of pictures of people sending me pictures that look like this. I bought this for dinner, or I would get a picture of a plate of pasta with sauce on it and the can next to it saying, I already made it. Is it okay? So this basically people just have to go into the store. Again, there are many, many other products that I research. I have connections with Mashgichim in Thailand. There's many Far East products here in Eretz Yisrael. I have a connection with Mashgichim in Belgium, in England, products made in Italy, much more than America, much more different types of products. So I do research a lot of those products, you know, Vietnam. So based on that, people do send me, but it's not I can't give a response within 5 minutes. Sometimes I'm not always available, but this is the baseline plus other products.
Right. So the ones that are not on your card, there are others. Let me just point out, there are others that are acceptable. You know, you're getting more into gray areas and things like that, which we can't discuss, but there are other places that a person could eat that would be acceptable, but you know, that's your baseline.
You're talking about products or restaurants?
Both.
So products is basically, yes, there are, let's say, hashgachas that I would say it depends on the product. With restaurants, listen, sometimes it depends on the situation. If someone's parents are taking them to a specific place, I can try to direct them within that place. We've made connections with the people that run the Hashgacha in cities like Netanya and Tzfas, which they're Rabbanut Mahadrins. Tzfas has something called Bedat Tzfas, and Netanya has something called Mahadrim and a Mahadrin Netanya. Well, in Yerushalayim, they also have three levels. It's called regular Rabbanut. Used to be two levels, Rabbanut Mahadrin, and then people were getting, and they opened a third level in the middle called Mehuderet. Okay, it's like buying an esrog, you know, aleph, 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 aleph. And then people realized you're getting confused between Mehuderet. The Israelis were getting confused between Mehuderet Mahadrin and Mahadrin, So they called it Mahadrin Mina Mahadrin. So and these things constantly change. So we're in the process of, you know, making connections in different cities that, you know, I get a lot of questions. Herzliya, Netanya, Tel Aviv, you know, it's complicated, especially because of Shemitah, but just, that's our goal, to get people at least two Melchik and two Fleshik places in every city that you can go and you can feel comfortable and enjoy
that's
your
great.
Vacation.
Oh, that would be great.
So this is that we've been Matzliach in many cities because you'd be surprised when we tell Israeli Mashgichim or the chief rabbi of Netanya, we told him what we did. He was like, what do you mean? You're not making money off this? You're not, what's going on here? So I said, no, we're here to service our community. And Baruch Hashem, we've been very Matzliach because Barina really, the Shem Shemaim, you know, he's really spearheaded this really with Kavan and the Shem Shemaim. And we have had a lot of Siyata the Shemaim, Baruch Hashem.
That's a great, I mean, we get these calls also, but obviously we're not on the ground. Right. You know, like you are, and you
we can switch. You guys can come here to the bunker and I'll come to the palatial offices if you guys
anytime, man. Anytime.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. So let me ask you a few pointed questions, Rabbi Farkas. So you go into a restaurant or you call the mashgiach on the phone and you talk to him and he tells you this is bedaz, this is good. Is that enough?
Is it me or the consumer?
Well, let's take both.
Okay. Okay, you start. Go for it.
Okay. No, I mean, so that's what you do, right? You go into a restaurant, you talk to the mashgiach, but I really mean the consumer. The consumer is going to call the mashgiach on the phone. The mashgiach is going to tell him. But by the way, the mashgiach is usually, his number is on the Teudah. In America, you don't have that. That is a difference. That's better.
The Mashiach and the Mefaker, and the Mashiach and the supervisor. Are usually right. Both
you can call them on their cell phone. Right. Not only between 2 and 3. So they tell you this is Mahadrin, this is Badatz, this is Sheiris, everything's good. So what is that enough?
So listen, generally the Mashgichim, you have to understand, in some of the hotels that we work together, I try to get these details of Hashgachas, but the bottom line is he's working for, let's call it, Rabbanut Mahadrin. His answer to you many times will be everything's Mahadrin. Now Mahadrin is a very generic term. And in every city, the Rabbanim of the city decide what's categorized as Mahadrin. So when you go to a different city, every city, one's Mahadrin will allow, I don't want to say, let's say one Mahadrin will allow tier 3 products, one Mahadrin will allow tier 2 products. So if you get a detailed, list from the Mashgiach, or Mashgiach says, we only use these 4 Hashgachas L'mashal. So again, kashrus is about the ingredients and how you process it. So if we're talking about a falafel shop, and again, Shemitah is a difference. So let's say not in the year of Shemitah. If you're talking about a falafel shop and the Mashgiach tells you that he's only using these 4 Hashgachas, and you see a Jewish guy behind the counter, theoretically that would consider that safe. The question is, would you do that, Reb Tzvi, in America? You go to Wichita, Kansas, and you call the Chabad guy, and he tells you that you only use Star K products, of course. Right.
Well, and so
would you be comfortable without a certificate eating in that falafel shop?
It depends. You don't have to answer the question.
You can send me a WhatsApp.
I think a falafel shop is as serious as a Fleishig restaurant, let's say, or something like that.
No, so well, that's what it is. There's falafel and pizza. There's fast food. There's sit down. So I'm asking, in America, would an American consumer feel comfortable doing this homework on his own? Would he eat there? I don't think so. I think
people go to Starbucks here and everything else. So,
well, just to backtrack a second, we do rely on many Chabad houses just without any,
nothing Chabad. I'm just saying in general.
Give an example of somebody. Right. The Chabad is all over. So that's all you meant. You didn't mean, but we do work well with them and we do rely on them. As that. But
no, I'm saying.
That it's really not enough to talk to the Mashgiach, because what he tells you is a lot of times not exactly, locked in, it's not locked.
It's
in
not uniform. Down. It's not uniform from place to place.
It could be. If a Mashgiach tells you in a falafel shop that they use only 4 Hashgachas, I would say that's safe. Not during the year of Shemitah. Yes.
Okay, but
if we're talking about a buyer set of fishing plays, then that's a little more complicated.
I mean, people are writing about the bugs. Okay, I understand the bugs. Okay, so that's, you're right, Enochinami. But
There's one more thing I wanted to ask you, Rob, before I get to the chats. What about hotel breakfast? This is a big deal. Okay, a lot of our listeners and a lot of Americans, they go to the Israeli hotels, and breakfast is included. With
Israeli breakfast.
What?
Israeli breakfast. It's supposed to be a big deal.
Israeli breakfast. It's included. It's a whole spread. You could eat their breakfast, lunch, and almost supper. Right. It's included with it, and they want to be able to eat there. For the night, they understand for meat, they're going to go somewhere else. They go to a place, one of those hashgachas that you showed us. But for breakfast, it's important that they be able to eat in that hotel. What should they do?
They should contact us.
Okay. And what will you tell them?
Okay, so basically, you have to understand. Let's talk about Yerushalayim, for example. Okay, the difference between Rabbanut Mahadrin and Rabbanut is Rabbanut Mahadrin is makban on Bishul Beis Yosef. Should I explain what that is? It means a Jew has to be cooking.
Yeah,
doing the actual cooking. Okay. The regular Rabbanut relies on Bishul Ramah, which generally most Hashgachah, but in America you'll rely on Bishul Ramah in conjunction with Mashgiach, right? Making sure that just in case fire, if you have a hotel with omelet stations, you have Mashgichim stationed at the omelet station, make sure the fires don't go out. Now, a lot of these hotels, they don't have, I've done Pesach programs with sometimes, 2 head Mashgichim, 22 Mashgichim, 2 Boedik Talaim. It's a serious, operation. Here in most of the hotels, you'll have 1 or 2 Mashgichim monitoring, on a Wednesday already, they're cooking breakfast, they're cooking dinner, they're already preparing for Shabbos, a lot going on. So it really depends. If it's a Rabbanut Mahajan restaurant, so again, kashrus is about the ingredients and how you process it. Just a bishul Yisrael part of it has to be make sure that it's taken care of. Now, regarding the ingredients, what we realize
isn't there less of an issue for as far as bishul Yisrael?
Well, considering that we're very close, in Yerushalayim, the cheaper labor is
Arabs.
Arabs, basically. Right. It's possible, yes, that if you have somewhere in, let's say, Haifa, you never really know. That's the truth, because there are, Druzim in different cities and stuff like that. But we realized that, we were getting a lot of questions about hotels. So what we did was we tried to go into some hotels, and it's literally a five-year project of building up a relationship, let us into the kitchens. We just want to see. So basically what I do is we go in once in a while, we go into these hotels that we have a working relationship and we discuss products. And Baruch Hashem, even in some hotels, we are matzliach to switch some products that come with a quote-unquote Mahajan Ashkacha, but based on my research, they wouldn't be considered Mahajan in America. And
if consumers are going to one of these hotels with this breakfast, they could contact you and ask you, what's the latest on the breakfast in that hotel? What can I eat with a reasonably, high level of comfort, and right? And that's very helpful.
Or what I can do is I can try to break the ice with the mashgiach, because a lot of times the mashgiach, like I said before, he'll tell you everything's Rabbanut Mahajan, but that's not what you're asking. You're asking a little more detailed. So if because they know me, a lot of these mashgiachim, so when I say that I'm sent, like I sent someone to Tveria this week, they actually come back from Tveria now. They went to a place that has regular Rabbanut and Het Mechira. So what are you going to eat? So basically I spoke to the mashgiach for a while, and they said, you know what? Send them to me. Tell them that Moshe Farkas sent you, and I'm going to take them for a little tour of, so basically what they ate was like a lot of the pastries, the power of pastry, the breads and the power of pastries, some of the cold cheeses, basically the cottage cheese, that comes in a bag, 5 kilo bag. It's like, you carry it on your back. Mm-hmm. They take out the cottage cheese out of a bag, put it in a bowl. Basically a lot of the cold unprocessed thing.
What I want to point out is, because they use the Het Mechira, which we don't have time really to go into the whole story, right, but a lot of our listeners know what that is anyway, about Shemitah, that the whole land of Israel is sold. So their pots and pans that they use become a problem if they cook vegetables in them, and then they cook something that has a good hechsher. We would not be comfortable with that. So even if you know that right now they're cooking for you, let's say eggs in a pan that they cooked some vegetables in, we have a problem with that, correct?
That's exactly the question I got at 9:17 a.m. The lady asked me, can I have eggs? What could be wrong with, I just want to have scrambled eggs. I want someone to make it for me. So I said one thing. The answer was Kalim. That's it.
Right.
Like exactly utensils, what you pointed out. Right. Utensils. You don't know what was in there before. Okay.
Right. Let me just take some of these chats so we can, let's see, some questions. Okay. Kashrus in a house rental. That's not really applicable right now. Maybe when we have on Rabbi Tendler. Okay. The two places per city list that you mentioned before.
I don't have that yet. The spreadsheet has a lot of cities all over Eretz Yisrael, and we're in the process of.
Oh, you're trying to,
We have Tveria, Tzfas, Netanya, Herzliya. I had a place till a month ago that was land debt, which would be tier one. So currently, I send people to two other places under a tier two Ashkacha in conjunction with speaking to the Mashgiach, who both of them that I know. But again, people have to know where they feel comfortable. If someone calls me and says, okay, where do you want to eat? So I tell them to this, I send them to this restaurant, speak to the Mashgiach. But if someone says, I only want to eat Aden Reuben only. So I said, but you're in Herzliya. There isn't only Aden Reuben. It doesn't exist. Maybe in the supermarket, you'll get yourself a little ices, but it just, people have to know where they're holding. I can't tell people where, I can give people information. I can't make decisions for them.
Right.
If people are in certain situations, they should contact their Rav to see how to deal with that specific
situation. Let me just mention your email again, Rabbi. It's zntkosher@gmail.com.
Or zntkosher.com. It's a very basic website, but in the process.
zntkosher.com. What's that?
Zntkosher.
You wrote it in the chat.
I wrote it before, but someone else is asking. They didn't see it before. Okay, some of the chats I see are about particular hashgachas, and we don't really, it's not really the place for it. But yes, there are, you know, other places perhaps you could eat, and you know, you could be in touch about those places. Let me see if there's anything else here that we wanted to mention, Rabbi.
One of the questions about the Milchik restaurant. That's an interesting question.
So is Milchik, here's the question we got emailed. Is it true that when it comes to Milchik restaurants in Israel, one can be lenient? In other words, there are almost no issues in a Milchik restaurant to watch out for. That was the question we got.
So in a Milchik restaurant, I actually think a Fleishik restaurant might be a little bit easier because essentially a steak place. I'm not assuming that the Mashgiach is on top of the meat, but I'm talking, right? But I'm talking about ingredient-wise. A Fleishik place is essentially meat and potatoes, okay?
Okay.
Now, a Milchik place, you have a lot of salads. So when a lot of times you'll call the restaurant, you'll ask them, where do you get your leafy stuff? They say it's Gush Katif. Gush Katif basically means it's greenhouse grown.
Right.
And you can ask Rabbi Tendler in a couple minutes what greenhouse grown means. Sometimes they come with a lot of different levels. And even in the better hashkachas, even if you get leafy stuff with the better hashkachas, the organizations only take responsibility if you wash it properly. So if you deal with a place, let's say there's one place that makes they sell salads. In our cafe, we wash, let's say, 3 cases a day. In that place, we wash 20 cases of lettuce a day. So someone has to be on top of it that the lettuce, the leafy stuff is being washed properly. That's A.
So let me just repeat that. That's very important because a lot of times you call the mashgiach in the Israeli,
and he'll say it's Gush Katif.
He'll say it's Gush Katif. Gush Katif. Everything is Gush Katif. So what you're saying is that's not enough because the Gush Katif has a rule that you need the Hechsher says.
Well, Gush Katif means greenhouse grown.
Gush Katif is a general term, but the right. Particular Hechsher has a requirement that you wash the lettuce before you use it to get rid of, you know, bugs that might still be there.
Like, for example, in our cafe when we first started, so we had one of the chefs, and he was a chef in one of the bigger hotels, and he said, "I'm going to wash the lettuce." So I said, "Let me see." He opened the bag, took the whole head of lettuce, dunked it in water, and started chopping it. You essentially all you did is you didn't do anything. You know, you have to separate the leaves. Yeah, basically, yeah. He was tabled it. Yeah. So it's important. That's a very important nakuda because Gush Katif is being thrown around a lot. That because, you know, people feel like that'll, you know, answer all questions. And the next nakuda really by Milchik restaurant is a lot of the cheese products. A lot of those products are coming from cheese all over the world. You know, cheeses are very highly sensitive. You know, there's a big production from the milking to the production to the rennet, v'chulu v'chulu. So, based on our research, not all those cheese products would be considered, let's call it tier one. So, and then we had talking about the sauces and stuff, but basically the leafy stuff and the cheese.
The answer to the question, is it true that a Milchik restaurant you can just be lenient? The answer is no, right? No.
Or low. Lam and Aleph.
Lam and Aleph, right. Ruchama is asking, what is the benefit of Gush Katif if it doesn't help you, if you need to wash it?
Well, it's anyway. better than not Gush Katif.
Well, a lot of the times, they for the better hashkachas, they're left with flies. It's greenhouse grown. Listen, there's no perfect science. You can ask Rabbi Tendler. There's no perfect science for getting rid of the bugs. You know, they have, you know, they do a run. And after they take it to the lab, and if it passes whatever the different requirements, then it's fine. Otherwise, it goes to the other hashkachas, you know. It goes down the chain of command or whatever chain of, you know. So you don't really know where it's holding when it gets to you. And also, it has to be washed properly, even if it does pass the...
Would it be Kedai Reb Tzvi to just to chazer over the whole Rabbanut situation and how that works, or... Is that too big?
We have a particular question here. Richard is asking.
Right. Well, that's what I'm asking. Maybe that's
say that the Rabbanut Hechsher is not as strict with Bishul Akum as the Mahadran Hechsher.
What I said was that in America generally, I don't know. Tell me if this is true. I think a lot of the Ashkachas are okay with Bishul Ramah. Is that correct, Rabbi Bayer?
Yes.
Okay,
yes,
correct. Now, good. Given that in Eretz Yisrael the culture is different, which means that there's many, many Sfardim in Eretz Yisrael. So the Rabbanut Mahadran, and I believe also the Star K, when they were here in Eretz Yisrael, they were Machben Abishal Beis Yosef, just because we're catering to a different clientele. That's what all I said. But both of those would work. But again, the Rabbanut Mahadran has to be Machben on that because they're catering to the general populace, which is includes many, many Sephardim.
Okay, very good. We do have some more questions, but I think our time is run out. We want to, I guess it is a daunting topic, you know, to discuss kashrus in Eretz Yisrael.
Can I just ask a quick question about
of course
leaving when you're flying out of Eretz Yisrael? So do you have anything to say about the what's the food on the airlines?
Listen, I get many questions about the lounge because every Jewish guy has a priority pass. And if you don't, you should get one quick.
Every Goldberg's got one, but I don't know.
I'll add you on.
Okay. Every Tendler has several.
It's again the Nakuda that I was saying, it's a game of supply and demand. If there's not enough of demand, in other words, which Hasidic guy has complained that he can't have the salad? He's just going to have the Coke and the crackers in the lounge, you know. But on the plane also, one of the questions I think Rabbi Goldberg was about the vegan meals. You have to understand the ovens on the plane don't have hashgacha, right? You don't know what's been in that oven. Regular oven, we can talk about Zeya and different things in ovens.
Right, vegan meals would definitely not be acceptable. Recommend that, right.
I have the number of the Mashgiach HaBalal, but you have to understand, he's working for a big organization that's catering to wider clientele. In America,
what you were saying about the lounge, I think Rabbi was actually asking about the planes. But
I'm saying both. We're saying both.
The lounge is what you're saying is regular Rabbanut, which is which
the Elal lounge might be a little bit better, but I don't have access to that. So, but the regular Dan lounge, which everyone basically goes to, is basically regular Rabbanut, correct?
Right. So that's the issue. Okay. I want to thank you very much. We could, I think, talk to you for another hour or two. But we'll let you get. I know you have those calls coming in, Rabbi.
Right, the pasta sauce with the pan.
Right, you did mention to me that you would appreciate if people would call you not from the restaurant while they're sitting down to eat, but an advance notice, you know, so you could guide them and not be put on the spot like that.
It's very important, Nakuda. I think just like people reserve rental cars and reserve hotels and reserve tours at the chocolate factory, I think it's also very important to kind of map out a little bit. Again, I don't think, again, when people come there, it's all generally, it's either to visit a child or to go on a tour, or, you know, you have to understand, you have to kind of, you know, you're on vacation, but you have to be a little responsible about it. This is just traveling anywhere. It's very important. I mean, you go to Panama or you go to South America, you want to make sure that you have the restaurants lined up.
Right.
I think it's very important to try to do that in as much as you can. But again, people try their best. But we're here.
All right. Well, thank you very much, Anish. Keep up the good work.
Thank you so much.
We're behind you. We support you, and we wish you a lot of hatzlacha.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for coming on.
Yeah. Have a good Shabbos.
Take care.
Good Shabbos.
Take care. Bye bye.
Bye bye. Okay. Terrific.
Just you and me, huh?
Well, we have Rabbi Tendler. Hold on a second. Let me get Rabbi Tendler on. We're going to talk now. We'll move to the United States. The situation in America. Hold on a second. Okay, let's wait for Rabbi Tendler to come on. And
where is he?
He sounds like he's outside.
I think he's in his office. Are you in your office?
You know, this is not a fake background. I actually ended up having a meeting.
You're in the safari.
No, but we have an event at the Marriott Waterfront in a couple of weeks. So they called last minute. They said the only time they can meet is today. So I figured what better place to have a talk about a travel webinar than, you know, at the Waterfront Marriott downtown with the harbor in the background.
There you go.
Okay.
Watch out for the squeegee, guys.
Well, okay. If you're going to travel, we're not here necessarily to recommend you travel to Baltimore, right? We're not going to go there.
Hey, watch it there.
Why do you think I leave so often? You know that.
Okay, Rabbi Tendler. So I want to just introduce you for a second that Rabbi Tendler is our food service director in Baltimore, and he runs the restaurants, hotels, caterers, and as well, he has many facilities across the United States and therefore does a fair amount of travel. I won't ask you how many miles you have this year, Rabbi Tendler. I won't put you on the spot. But I know that United knows you by your first name already. Okay.
You know, that's not the point. As long as they pick up the phone when I call.
Right. Okay. Okay. So we have a lot to talk about when traveling locally in the United States. You know, it's not necessarily going to be kosher food where you are traveling to. So you must, right? You must be adept at bringing food with you or figuring out how to find food in the places where you go. Just before you answer that, I just want to say we got an email that we must mention that Trader Joe's across the United States is the go-to for some people. When you're looking for like kosher items, they have a very good selection of kosher products that you wouldn't find elsewhere. But that's really true about almost every supermarket, right? I mean, if you go to a Safeway or
a Walmart.
What? Or right. Walmart, Walmart. Right. You can find OU, right. Star K products in all these places. Right. So you're not going to stop.
That's true. So rule number one is, like Ezra Farkas actually mentioned before, you know, you could do a little planning ahead. If you did enough research to book your plane ticket, you could probably figure out a little bit what to do about food. Now, sometimes you don't have a choice. You're going for a few weeks to a place where, you know, you're renting some Airbnb somewhere and, you know, who knows what you hope it's filled. You know, generally speaking, you're going to bring food with you. Cooler bags, things like that are obviously the way to go. If you don't, like, for example, last week I happened to have gone to I was somewhere in Miller, Indiana. I had to go do an inspection. And so Indianapolis does have a film community, but I wasn't going to be in enough time to go anywhere. And 10 o'clock the night before my flight, my wife says to me, "What are you doing about food?" And I was like, you know, I forgot about that. I completely forgot. I had a very busy day. Someone's saying they don't see or hear me. Is there any issues?
Well, as long as some people can, if we can just have some people chat, do you hear Rabbi Tendler and see him? Then we can assume that it's okay.
Okay.
If some people are hearing you, then it means that it's getting out there and the problem is on the other side. Yes. Okay.
Okay. Anyway, so I completely forgot. I forgot to pick up any food. It was only one day, but still a day. I wasn't planning on fasting the whole day. So there are so many options in the United States for sure. As you mentioned, any supermarket is going to have, the estimate anyways is between 60-70% of the items are kosher, whether it's Quaker oatmeal, granola bars, cereals, instant mashed potatoes.
60-70%? Wait, really?
Have a Hefsher.
Yeah, something like that.
I can believe
have
it.
Have a good Hefsher?
And in health food stores, like 80-90%. Maybe not necessarily all of them have a good Hefsher, but yes.
My father, Olav Shalom, used to in his briefcase, my father was a real estate appraiser. So he used to travel around a lot. And in his briefcase, he used to keep a can opener. Because
now they're all pop-up.
Yeah, we don't have pop-ups. Back then, they didn't have pop-ups. But yeah, that's what he would do. You know, you go get a can of tuna or something.
So, I mean, you could tuna maybe you can't necessarily find, but part of items, cereal, instant rice, the Minsley Star K certified Minsley rice and quinoa meals, ready cooked, ready to eat, are available in all supermarkets. So you will not starve. It might not necessarily be your first choice of prime rib and, you know, hot, you know, instant hot potatoes or something like that, but there's going to be plenty of food no matter where you go. As you mentioned, Trader Joe's, and I'll also mention Costco in particular, in many, many cities have selections of harder to get kosher items, whether it be cheeses, meats, or things like that. I was once doing an inspection, actually a vegetable inspection in the middle of New Mexico. And I went into a random, I had to fly into, I flew into El Paso. So they're also, I don't remember why I didn't bring food or I was just traveling from city. It was a whole week trip. So I couldn't bring enough food. A random Costco in the middle of El Paso, Texas had the regular Jewish brands of deli meats and coleslaws that you find all in all the Costco's around here. I don't know how big the community is in El Paso, but, you know, these are things in the United States you can generally find and get by pretty much anywhere in the country.
If you keep Yashin, you could really starve in some areas.
So rice is not going to be a problem of Yashin. Wheat cereals generally not going to be a problem of Yashin.
Rice cakes. You can get rice cakes, I guess.
Rice cakes, but also I mentioned before the Star King Minsley meals, which come ready to cook, you know, ready to eat. Obviously not going to be a problem with Yashin. Personally, I am not putting Yashin, and I have traveled quite considerably. So again, you might not get your first choice of all the different items and cookies that you crackers that you're looking for, but you will not starve.
So that's how you keep your figure, huh? That's how you keep your weight down.
Well, you know, listen,
you're not putting Yashin.
You know, you can come biking with me, or if I go over it once in a while.
Okay. So I just want to mention that we have a fair amount of travel articles on our website. Rabbi Heber has written articles about Tfilas HaDerech and about flying on a plane and davening on a plane. And I have some articles about hotels and about cruises, which I've never been on, but but we have a fair amount of articles that people, I think we have a section called travel that you could see all of those. And we recommend that you take a look at those before you, you head out. Just out of the blue, Rabbi Tendler, since I mentioned davening, you have some ideas about where you should daven when you travel, right? In airports. And
So what my goal was referring to is I made notes for myself when I started traveling about all the different airports, where the best spots are to daven, whether it's empty gates, specific phone booths, like they used to, many airports still have like banks of phone booths, which obviously nobody uses anymore, but some of them are still there, whether it's lounges or clubs or even places where you're not, as Rabbi Bayer would say, zeicha to the privilege of having a lounge pass. Many airports have business centers which are available to all flyers, even if you're not one of the frequent flyers or have lounge passes. And generally, those are quieter areas with a desk and a little bit of a cubicle type of a situation. And, I made notes in many different airports of where the best places are to daven. You know, generally speaking, you can always find a quiet spot or a quiet gate, unless you're talking like smack in the middle of the day, in the middle of one of the big hubs, Newark, JFK or something. Maybe it's a little harder, but generally speaking, you can always find a spot. I'll also mention that I've had this experience twice already, where I'm walking through an airport. This last happened to me. I was in Dulles. I don't remember where I was going anymore. I was walking through Dulles, middle of the afternoon. It was a full deck of flights going out. Dulles is a United hub. And I'm walking through the terminal. And you see on this side, just literally, there's like a little like ledge in the terminal wall. Right there was a Muslim guy with his mat spread out and, doing his thing. And you're like, in the middle of a busy terminal, he doesn't care. So, someone once told me a line also is that a Hasidic guy in L.A., he said there's two places he's not embarrassed to walk around in his strimal and full, Hasidisha, Bekesha, and everything like that. In the middle of Williamsburg, where everybody walks around like that. And in the middle of L.A., he says, "Nu in L.A., nu nochem eshugana gaten gas." You know what I mean? You're not any crazier than the next guy out there in this day and age. So you want to pop yourself down by a gate, put on your towels and twill and start davening. So start davening. So they think you're crazy. They think you're crazy. Guess what? You know what it means? It means no one's going to sit next to you on the plane. That's not necessarily a chassar.
Okay. All right, very good. Let's take some of these questions. I see they're asking, but in a hotel, if you want to heat up your food in the microwave, what do you
So there's a few recommend? Options. First one, you could double wrap. That's obviously the easiest option, probably the best option. Take any two bags. You have you could take the bag that they give you in the for the ice bucket and a clean garbage bag or something, double wrap your food, stick it in the microwave, and that's probably the best etzah that you have. The other thing is that they do sell on Amazon now these plug-in, they look like a little lunchbox, the size of a small pan, and they have bigger ones the size of a 9x13 pan that you can plug in, and in about half hour, it heats up your food. It's basically a traveling hot plate. They say it's completely safe to use.
What's it called? Airplanes? What's that called?
I don't know exactly what it's called. I literally just learned about this recently. Beaker Cholim here bought a bunch of them for people who are in hospitals to use. It's something that I'm planning on getting one because it's something that I can imagine being very, very helpful when you're traveling. So that's obviously another way you can heat up food.
That's cool.
Now, the other thing, someone had a question that I just noticed before that was an interesting question. Atlanta said it has a prayer room chapel. That's a discussion. Whether you have multi-denominational prayer rooms or chapels, right. Whether you're allowed to go in there and daven, because it's not really... Jewish room, it's also used for all the religions.
Sometimes there's nothing there on the walls that's really objectionable. It's just an empty
room.
That's
what the Rav says. I remember we discussed with
them. I'm not sure. Times, I don't know.
I never bother with them because I go into the club. But
I was once on an army base, and on army bases, a lot of times their chapels are like universal. So like they have like a big cross, and then they like flip it around, and there's like a big mug and dove it or something.
It's like
so,
the Daisy element of
how that works.
Yeah.
I found what you're talking about, Rabbi Tendler, while you're talking. It's called Hot Logic.
So I'm going to put up that. Yes, that's right. That's right.
I'm putting up this link. It looks like a long link for just that one item, but somehow that's what Google gave me. But if you click that, you should get to the to that little warmer you're talking about that you can heat up the food. What did you say, like 45 minutes?
Less than that. I forgot what to say. It gets up to, I think, 165, 170 degrees. So it really makes your food, really considerably hot. It really works.
It cooks or it just heats it up?
At that temperature, it could cook, technically. It would take a little longer to cook, but to reheat meals, for sure. Whether you bring their own or you bring those Maspia or the Meal Mart packaged meals that, you know, that are shelf-stable, which I have. I traveled to Korea once for a whole week with those meals, and, you know, I didn't lose that much weight from them, that I could tell you.
You're talking about these kind of meals?
Labrio, those have a heating element where they self-heat up themselves. Besides those, it's actually the same company. Meal Mart makes the meals that you just have to either pop in a microwave, and they come already double sealed.
Oh,
so
I see.
Those are a good option as well.
Mm-hmm. It's called Hot Logic. Someone saw that in the office, I think, right?
Robert Tenlin brought it in.
Oh, it was like a Shiloh
for Shabbos. Yeah, I brought it and showed it to Rob. Yeah, that was one of the Poland's ones.
We discussed how you could use that for Shabbos. We're not going to get into that now, but there is a way. We did come out with a way how to use it.
It does not need to be toilet because your food's not actually touching. It's just used as a heating apparatus. And do you need one for milk and flesh sticks? Yes, it's an oven. So as long as your food is wrapped properly, then you should be okay. But again, it's exactly like an oven for Hilchas weekday and Hilchas Shabbos. So keep that in mind as well.
That's cool.
Chani's asking, do you need one for milk and fleshik? I think the answer
it would be like a toaster oven.
No,
I think it would be a good idea because things probably spill.
It's definitely
in there.
A good idea. It's a small space. Again, if you're careful that nothing spills, then you know you could talk about it. But otherwise, again, treat it like an oven, like a rabbi is saying, a small toaster oven. Treat it exactly the same way.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Any other tips? Anything else that you want to talk about, Rabbi Tendler? How about when I go into a local, how do I know whether or not, if I'm going far away, how do I know if the restaurant is under a good hechsher or not? You could call
the Star K, and then they give you the famous no information answer. Right, it's a no information answer. Right, we never heard of them. We don't want to say, you know, all kinds of
funny. We'll tell you we don't comment on local places.
Right, that's right. That's right. We're always so helpful to the consumers. Anyways, but there's a very simple solution that I've done myself many times. Many times when we say no information, let's be honest, sometimes we actually don't have information. You know, that happens sometimes. What I do is many times is you call up the restaurant and you go through a very simple routine. I think Ray Fargus mentioned something similar as far as talking to the mashgiach. You call up and you ask, number one, can I speak to the mashgiach? So you see if they have a mashgiach or they don't. Now, in some out-of-town places, they don't necessarily have a mashgiach. That's a different question. But you're talking about collecting information. You call and ask to speak to the mashgiach. So they say there's no mashgiach. Here's someone who's in charge of kosher. And then after that, whoever answers the phone and you talk to, you'll decide what you want to do. But let's assume they have a mashgiach or somebody who's filling that role. He gets on the phone, he says, Shalom Aleichem, are you the mashgiach? Yes. Whose hashgacha are you under? You'll get funny answers sometimes. Sometimes you thought it was one and it was a different one. And you could say, oh, I thought you were under that hashgacha. Let's say, oh, we switched last week. You know, I've had that happen to me. It's a good question to ask. Whose hashgacha are you under? Is everything in your restaurant Yashin and Pas Yisrael? Now, you may not care about Yashin, you may not care about Pas Yisrael, but any mashgiach should have an answer to that question, a quick answer to that question. You should know off the bat what everything is Yashin and Pas Yisrael, and you should also know that Yashin and Pas Yisrael are not the same thing, right? That's also something to know. Okay. So you say, is everything Yashin and Pas Yisrael? Are you there all the time? You know, what do you do about vegetable checking, and which shchitas do you use? Any mashgiach who's doing his job properly should have instant answers to every single one of those questions. Now, he may say, when you ask him, let's say about the shechita, I have to go check. I'm only the afternoon mashgiach. The meat deliveries come in the morning. Okay, that's a valid answer. But by asking these five or six questions, you really can get yourself a picture of what's going on. I tell people the same thing. They're going to a hotel. They're going to a program. You know, Pesach, obviously, the list is a little bit longer. But like, there's only so much we can tell you about hashgachas that are unknown to us. But this is a way you can do your own research. And based on the information you get, you make your decision if you're comfortable or if you're not comfortable. I had myself an experience in one out-of-town place where I called up a restaurant, asked to speak to mashgiach, you the mashgiach. First of all, mashgiach just went to the bathroom. It happens a lot. Okay, yeah, right. Okay, anyways, let's see. I got the mashgiach on the phone. You the mashgiach, yes. Is everything Yashin and Pas Yisrael? Yes, absolutely. I said, what about your franks and blanks? He said, everything's Yashin and Pas Yisrael. I happen to know, even in Baltimore, it's very hard to get Yashin pastry dough. You know, this was like in March or something. So he didn't know the difference in Yashin and Pas Yisrael. Okay, I'll give him that one. They said, which vegetables do you use? He's like, I don't know. We just wash them. Like, okay. I said, and which chita do you use? He's like, is that the meat?
No.
I was like, yeah, chita generally refers to, I mean, it's not talking about the pizza or the salads. So he said, yeah, I got to call the rabbi and get back to you. I said, don't bother. Same town, Same Mashkocha. I called another restaurant. I asked, you know, can I speak to Mashkiach? Mashkiach, yes. Which vegetables was to use? Bodek or whatever he said. We check him with Shmat Vadik, whatever it was. Which chitas to use? He said, well, what do you want to order? I was like, I don't know what's on the menu. He rattled off for me the entire menu, every item with what shchita it was. Now, it happens to be personally, I wasn't so comfortable with every shchita that was on there, but I went to that restaurant and I chose the items that I was comfortable with because I knew this guy has the place under control.
Uh-huh.
So that's a very simple solution.
Do you think any consumer can do that? What you're saying?
Yeah, absolutely. Again, if you're willing, if you don't,
it has to be hashgacha that has a base level hashgacha that you know.
Right. Well, again, let's say I don't have any specific preference on shchita. Any national agency certifying a shchita is okay for me, which is a valid mahalach for consumers who don't know anything different than that, which is fine. We're not going into that, right? The bottom line is you want to see if there's a mashkia here who is competent, and if he has instant answers to all those questions, or you know, he has intelligent answers. How about that? To all these questions, you know, you're dealing with someone who knows what he's doing. That's it. And then you make your decision.
I just know from personal experience, growing up in an out-of-town place, and then going back later. You know, now that I know more, you know, it's always a lot of times it's one thing that they have a roving mashgiach. They don't have a full-time mashgiach in many places.
This is a way to get information and then you make your decision. I'm not saying that any one particular answer is more acceptable than the other. The other way to go on vacation is, which is sometimes a good idea for many reasons, is you go on vacation, as I say, with an open mind and eyes closed. and then you do what you want and go where you want, right? So.
Okay. All right. Just let me get back to some of the questions here. Hotel buffets, waffle makers.
Okay, so hotel buffets and hotels in general. Let's blast through hotels in 30 seconds or less over here.
Okay, go ahead.
If someone's going to a hotel, let's say you're going for a weekday, so we're only going to talk about the breakfast buffet. So let's talk about, let's assume Chol Yisrael is not a question for you, but if it is, then you have to deal with that. But let's say they're talking about power of cereals that they have. Their cold cereals generally should be fine. If you have any concerns, you can ask to see the package. You know, I don't know about you. This has nothing to do with working in the Star K, but I personally have a tvius eye in on real Cheerios versus off-brand Cheerios. But you could definitely ask to see the box if you have any concerns about the
even
cereal.
Even so, I mean, regular Cheerios. I mean, regular Cheerios, Tom, even off-brand, there's really no shallots there.
Yeah. I'm just saying, most of them are going to be kosher anyway. But I'm just saying, I can look at it and say, okay, these are Cheerios. These are real Fruit Loops and, you know, real Cocoa Puffs or, you know, whatever else my kids eat. But most people have that kind of tvius eye.
I'll be honest with you. I don't think I could tell by looking at them. I guess I don't eat enough Cheerios.
All right, Bar, you eat peanut butter and jelly for breakfast, I guess, in your house. So maybe I'll start coming to you. I'm sick of cereal. Anyway.
The only thing I would tell you that I could tell is when we discussed with Rabbi Heber, the difference between cornflakes that are made naturally and those that are ground up and reconstituted.
Right, but that's, they look different. Hello, cornflakes look different.
There's
anyway.
A difference in the broth. That's not about the kashrus. Right, yeah. Right.
That's a rough.
That's the only thing I could tell.
Anyway, so a lot of hotels also have almond or soy milk available because a lot of people have allergy concerns. So that's something also is a plus for consumers. Beyond that, other than if there's packaged cookies, cakes, muffins, or things that which come packaged with a hechsher on them, which most of them do, maybe not Chol Yisrael, but most of them come packaged with a hechsher, those should be fine. There's very little else you're going to find at a hotel buffet that really, at the end of the day, we're going to be comfortable recommending. Not the waffle maker, not the oatmeal that they make themselves. Obviously, the packaged oatmeal will be okay. The juice machines, if they're 100% juice, would be okay. The eggs, obviously, are out. The yogurts, generally, they're not having the kosher yogurts at the hotel. They have the Danone or other companies that only have the K, which contain gelatin in them. So there's nothing else really from a hotel breakfast bar that we would feel comfortable recommending other than the cold cereal, the milk, if you're not making a Chol Yisrael, or soy milk, almond milk, and anything else that's packaged. If they have bread there, you know, regular bread, you can ask to see the package. Chances are it's probably kosher, although not necessarily. And bread is something that absolutely needs hashgacha. So let's assume the kosher bread is kosher. Then you can take the packages, if they have packages of cream cheese and the peanut butter and jelly that have a hashgacha, and use those. The toasters are not good. And the waffle maker is not good. There's really nothing else at a hotel breakfast bar that, you know, is worth discussing. And the reason people ask why is because, first of all, there's so many other things that go on behind the scenes at a hotel, whether you think they're always using the same product or not necessarily using the same product. Waffle mixes definitely need a hashgacha. Because it has a brand name on it doesn't mean they're always using that brand. Trust me, I've seen it, okay? In food service, we've seen it all, as they say. And on top of that, anyone who's lived in a Bachram Dira you know what you can do with a waffle maker and with a toaster. you know what you can do with you can make a suda shleim hamelach b'shaita from a waffle maker, right? So we don't have to go there and discuss what other things could possibly happen. So therefore, it's not something that we would recommend.
Arthur is saying that most Danin has an OU, but that's not correct.
You can check the label easily. It'll say gelatin on the label if it has
most
gelatin.
Most Danin that you buy in your kosher supermarket has an OU, but the Danin that you buy elsewhere has just a K because of the gelatin inside there.
You'll see the gelatin.
Right.
The plain coffee, the plain vanilla
have an OU on them. The other ones do not. None of the other ones don't have. Now, the hard-boiled eggs and hotels are not okay. They're straight out bishalakum unless they come packaged with a hechsher on them. Now, as far as if it's plain coffee in hotels, it should be fine. And the coffee makers in the room also generally should be okay as well. Now, if you're staying in a hotel for Shabbos, that's a whole other list of complications. And these we have articles about. You can look them up at the Conscious Currents website, plug. And that's as far as door access, automatic lights turning on, bathrooms having electronic flush and things like that. Those are all things that someone would have to, go walk through, so to speak, before Shabbos and be prepared for. Not saying there aren't ways necessarily to get around all of them, but that's something you'd have to do your own research on, depending on the hotel you're staying in.
Let me ask you one more thing, Rabbi. Let me take you one more place, Rabbi Tendler. Meals on the plane, right? People are traveling.
What's a meal on a plane?
A meal on the plane.
I haven't seen one of those in a
while. That's true. You only get it when you go to Eretz Yisrael, right? So
They're coming back in.
They are in America?
Yeah. So some flights.
It's only at your level, I think, Rabbi Tendler. Your travel level, I think, maybe.
One second. There's a story with Mr. Zev Wolfson, Zecharno Livracha, that someone once saw him flying, and he always, sat in economy class. That was, he didn't spend an extra penny on anything like that. Someone came to him and said, "Mr. Wolfson," he said, "how come you're sitting in economy class?" He's like, "Why? There's a lower level? There's a cheaper level?" If you travel a lot, it is something that's definitely beneficial, but the benefits that you get from traveling a lot are the airline gives them to you, so they keep you loyal, and they do a very good job at that, keeping you loyal. So it's not about, becoming the haughty guys walking onto the, sitting in your first class seat with your nose up in the air, looking down at all those peasants walking by in the aisle over there. It's just a matter of people who fly a lot, and it's a terrible drag to travel. And I will tell you something else. Like the first week that I started all this travel, first couple of months, I was doing a lot of travel when I started with the vegetables particularly, it's like a schmuck. And we get so many phone calls from people, I want to travel during Kashrus World and travel the world. I didn't travel for like 10 months during COVID. And the first time I got back on a plane, I thought like, oh, I'd be ready to travel again and hit the road. I was like, can they cancel the flight, please? Like, it is not glamorous.
I know
the feeling. It is a complete schlep. I'd much rather be home than anywhere else. So anyway, having said that, with airline meals, so getting a perk of having an airline meal on a plane when you're schlepping around from city to city to city like a mishugana, for a week straight, is sometimes very beneficial and could be very helpful, assuming it has a kosher symbol on it. Now, the meals on airlines have to be sealed. Airlines mix meals up all the time. Certain routes, obviously, Tel Aviv routes all have kosher meals, but even San Francisco, Newark, and LA Newark now again started serving kosher meals. Delta has a few as well. I'm not familiar with Delta. You can ask Rabbi Goldberg or Rabbi Shaul Goldberg. He's a Delta man. I typically fly United. The meals have to come sealed, completely sealed. And the companies that make the airline meals, so United, it's Fresco, Starcase certified. So we know firsthand the meals are properly sealed and delivered to the airline sealed. If they are not sealed, do not eat it. Do not trust anybody's word or anything else other than what you see in front of you, that the meal has to be sealed. The flight attendants mean well. They're here to help you and trying to help you. They're saying, oh, I just unwrapped it for you. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to unwrap it for you. And they hand you the meal totally unsealed. Don't eat it. And I'll give you a story that literally just happened within the last few weeks. An uncle of mine texted me. He works at a big firm in New York. And they brought in pizza, somebody's birthday or something like that. They get these kinds of things all the time. So obviously for the firm people that work there, they bring in kosher pizza. And the office manager does the ordering, knows this. She knows the routine already. She's done this 100 times. He texted me. He's like, they brought the pizza. They put it on the table. They put a sign. This is the kosher table, as they do all the time. I didn't see any tape or seal or anything on the box to indicate that it was kosher pizza. Should have got it from Bravo Pizza, which is, everyone knows Bravo Pizza Shop is a kosher pizza shop down the block. He said, what do you think I should do? I said, and this was a text message. I said, that's a tough call. I mean, there's no simanim. You're completely relying on the fact that a non-Jewish person, as good meaning and as well meaning as they are, well intentioned as they are, don't keep kosher. So halachically, don't have nemanis. And how do you know that it's a kosher pizza? There's nothing really you can do.
Well, pepperoni might give it away.
Well, so this is a cheese pizza. Okay, that was the first hint. Very good, right, buyer. So I said, you know, there's really very lucky thing. If you call the pizza shop and they confirm the order, then we could discuss it. He calls me back a half hour later, breathless, flustered, and shaking. He said he called the office manager and she made a simple mistake. She called Bravo Pizza and not Bravo Kosher Pizza. There's two pizza shops in the area.
Jesus Louise.
Okay. So as well-meaning, as well-intentioned, Chazal were much smarter than us. And they said your food needs simanim. Your food should have simanim. At the same time. Yeah.
I'm sorry. But an airline meal, Lamaisa, if it comes in, all they did was open it. You can see all the simanim everywhere.
So if you can tell, but I'm talking about a situation you can't tell. Right. And that has happened to a number of people I know, this kind of situation. So yes, if you can tell, then you're good to go. And that was actually segueing into the next point I was going to make. And that is the famous story that everyone talks about where a guy got up to wash, up and roped his corned beef and pastrami
was
sandwich,
which
is by definition Jewish.
Yeah. What? It was Rav Kolesky.
Anyways,
he got up to...
It was not Rukovsky. Maybe he wouldn't ask you this question on a smicha faher, even though he didn't faher and kuftet ches, but okay, maybe he would ask just to throw you a loop, which was like him. Anyway, so he got up to wash and he comes back and he decided that his meal was bashan zalman and ayin because he hadn't supervised and it was sitting there open and no other Jewish people around or no other people paying attention to watching his meal, obviously. And he didn't eat it. And the person next to him said, you know, why aren't you eating it? He said, because Jewish law prohibits it if it's unsupervised from eating it. So the guy said to him, wow, your law really protected you because when you weren't looking, I slipped a piece of ham in there just to see what would happen if you eat it. Now, that story is very nice. I mean, I'm not sure if it's nice. It's baloney, pardon the pun. It doesn't really make any sense, not halachically and not practically. Practically speaking, I don't really believe people would actually do that. But let's say I'm naive and I've never seen a trickster before in my whole story in food service and dropping ashkochas and picking up ashkochas. That happens constantly in this business. So I don't know anything about that. Fine. Halachically speaking, there's nothing wrong with it, at least for Ashkenazim, right? If you have tfilas ayin, you opened your pastrami sandwich that was sealed properly or you brought it with you, you come back, your pastrami sandwich is still there, looks like you left it the same way it was before, 100% mutter for you to eat.
Right. Plus also the fact that you're not going away for a long time. They got,
right.
You know,
you're just going to wash and you're coming right back. There's really no problem.
Right,
there's really no problem.
Right, that's a story that we probably didn't happen. Let me ask you before we finish, Rabbi Tan. I know we could go on all day. Do you have any practical tips for travel now in these difficult times? Like, besides don't.
besides don't. Practical tips in traveling. So let's see. Number one is that if flight is delayed and canceled, the best solution is never to go over to the customer service counter. And try to wait on those lines that are a mile long from everyone else. Generally speaking, you get faster service by calling the customer service center, and usually they can help you just as much, or go to a different part of the airport and find a different customer service counter. Also, if you have online access, a lot of times they'll let you change your flights online. This is a big point of frustration for many people. I know you wait online for hours just to get your flight changed. You could have called, you could have waited online, you could have gone online and done it yourself in 3 minutes flat. I once had the situation where my flight landed late and I was going to miss my connecting flight. I remember it was a very, very tight situation where it was the last time I did this. It was like the last flight out on a Thursday night. Never do that unless you're really stuck, especially now, right? If you're that last flight out that you're going to make it home before Shabbos, right? Be prepared to stay for Shabbos, okay? Always think that in the back of your head.
Know what your options are if your flight
has
a problem.
Know what your options are. Right. Anyways, but I happened to be sitting next to a guy who was Global Services. For those uninitiated, Global Services is like the real snobs of the world who are like the highest. I'm only 1K in United. This is like you have to buy full fare.
Oh, where'd he go?
Tell you how to get it. Okay. Anyway, I was sitting next to this guy. He called up United for me.
Wait, Rabbi, tell him we're missing the story.
I said, I'm only a lowly 1K. He called up United for me, and instantly on the spot, they rerouted me, fixed the whole situation before I even got to the gate. You know what I mean? So, and that's, he happened to be in Global Services, but many times you can do the same thing on your own. If you call up on the phone, there's many times less hold time than waiting in line.
Can we have your cell phone number listed here so that people can call you for...
What else? I don't know. What else?
No, it's very good. It's giving us a lot of practical information. I just want to say, if we have questions, I'm sure people have. I see there's a lot of chats, and we're just not able to get to everything. And Rabbi Tenler has a lot to say, and there's a lot to talk about. If your question wasn't answered, you can reach us at 410-484-4110. You can leave a message for Rabbi Tenler. You can ask the front desk, our busy front desk. They know a lot. They have a book that they work from. They can probably answer your question just like that. Or you can leave a message for Rabbi Tenler. You can email us at info@star-k.org. And Rabbi Tenler is circling. I hope he's all right down there in downtown Baltimore. Okay.
Squeegee guys didn't get him.
I hope he's all right. All right. Something happened to Rabbi Tenler. Okay. That was not the way I wanted to end it, Rabbi Tenler. Let me see if he came on again. One second. Let's see if he's back. I don't know where he went. Okay. Okay. Brocha has been asking us. Okay. There you go. There you go. Brocha has been asking us the following question. She wants to know, do we have hotels to recommend that do not use electronic keys and only you in America and only use the regular old style keys?
I guess
keys.
It's as reliable, internet connection as reliable as flights being on time.
Okay. Can you hear us, Rabbi Tenler? Rabbi Tenler? No, I guess not. Okay. So the question is, the
older hotels would be the ones to go for, but
well, not necessarily. Older hotels, they revamped themselves. Yeah. We don't. The answer is no. We don't have a list of such hotels. What I can tell you is that there are some hotels that are near some of the major from areas that make sure that they keep those old style locks. In Eretz Yisrael, I think all of the hotels that are catering to such from clientele do have what I've seen. They have for Shabbos, they will give you a regular key, and they will take a deposit of $100 to make sure they get it back.
What's the methodology that someone could use in an American hotel though that has the electric locks? But
Rabbi Hindman holds that you can ask the non-Jewish personnel to open it for you because it's right. the shvus, the malka mitzvah. It's one derabanan on top of another derabanan. And you're going in for a mitzvah to go to sleep or to get your food, whatever it is, and in that way, that is he allows that. In our article on hotels, we have a couple of other ideas of how to deal with your door on Shabbos. But I would tell you to answer your question directly is that yes, there are some hotels. We don't have a list of them in the United States. Okay, Rabbi Bayer, I think we will call it.
All right.
Call it the end of the webinar. There's so much more to talk about. We want to thank everyone for joining. I think it was informative, at least for me it was.
Me too.
Thank you, Rabbi Bayer, for joining us. Thank you, Rabbi Farkas, if you're still listening. Thank you for joining us from Eretz Yisrael. I do want to mention just one more thing about Eretz Yisrael. There is, he's in Ramat Eshkol, right. So in Ramat Eshkol, which is a neighborhood in Yerushalayim, there's a mall. There's a strip mall, maybe with 30 stores. Okay. About 8 or 9 of them are food stores. There's a bagel shop and there's a pizza shop and there's a dairy and there's a meat and there's a number of stores. Most of them have a good hashgacha, either Rabbi Rubin or they have Rabbi Wiener's hashgacha or they have, those type of hashgachas. Of course, you have to read the letter, the Tu'udah. So we found and there's parking. So what you have to pay for. So if you're looking for a place to go, I don't get any commission. I'm just saying personally, I found that, it's a good place. The mall in Ramat Eshkol has good restaurants that are acceptable hashgacha. And I found that to be a good place to eat. Great. Rabbi Tenler is calling me. So hold on. Let me see what – this is old style. This is a phone. So let's see. Rabbi Tenler. Okay. We're still on. So do you want to come back on? Or basically, we believe that we're ending that webinar. Okay. I want to thank you very much for joining us. All right. Take care. Be well. Okay. So again, thanks everyone for joining. These webinars are archived on our website at star-k.org and also on our Vimeo channel. If you Google Vimeo Star K Kosher, you'll find them, also on YouTube. So if you're interested, oh, on Paran Street. That's right. Moshe is telling us that
I don't know what that was. Okay.
Paran Street is where that mall is, and that's where you can get those. There's a little small meat place. It's like the size literally of my desk. Yeah. And it's a hole in the wall. And they it's called Inburger, and it has a good hashgacha, and it's very good for a small place. They make burger after burger, or a salad and a burger, and it's actually very good. And after struggling to find places that we could rely on, and everybody would find, there's even like a pizza next to the burger, so some people can eat milkshakes and some people can eat fleishiks over there, so everybody can be happy. Anyway, I want to wish you everybody at Slacha on your travels. Everybody should be safe and travel well without any disruption, without any agmas nefesh. And we want to wish you a good Chodesh coming up for Chodesh of next week. And thank you again for joining. You will get an email. If you signed up for this, you will get an email to sign up for the next one. And we hope that you'll join us again in the future. Thank you very much. Take care.
Thank you. Take care.
Be well. Bye-bye. Bye-bye.